Welcome to the Edu All-Stars Podcast.
Hey guys, my name is Todd Nesloni, and I would like to welcome you to the 51st episode of Edu All-Stars. You can find me on Twitter at TechNinjaTodd. My co-host today is...
Hey, my name is Chris Kessler. You can find me on Twitter at IamKessler. And once again, we'd like to thank everyone back to the podcast. Thanks for the great response, all the blog comments, and reviews on iTunes. Greatly appreciated.
And we would like to thank Remind 101 for sponsoring this episode and our last couple episodes. If you haven't checked out Remind 101 yet, definitely do. They are a great source to text parents and students without ever needing their phone number, and they never need yours. You can find them at remind101.com, or we have a link on our eduallstars.com website.
And then lastly, as you listen to this week's episode, we encourage you to tweet out using the hashtag EduAllStars. It kind of makes it fun to have a little back channel conversation going on while we're recording these sessions.
And we are very excited tonight to have the first of our four marathon episodes tonight. We have Nicholas Provenzano, who is a teacher in Michigan. He's a popular blogger and known for his work with the 20% Time Movement. He was also McCall's 2013 Technology Using Teacher of the Year and ISTE's 2013 Outstanding Teacher of the Year. So thank you, Nick, for coming on with us today.
Thanks for having me. I always love talking to other educators. It's always a good time, especially you guys.
Well, I guess the best way for us to start is telling our listeners a little bit more about your background and how you ended up in education.
Yeah, sure. I've been teaching for 12 years now, just wrapping up my final week next week, as a matter of fact. High school English has been my primary focus with a couple of years in social studies. How did I get involved in education? I really wanted to take class with this really cute girl in college, and it was an is that okay to say? I don't know.
Heck yes, that's okay.
that's like partially true. There was actually a good friend in college, and you know, I was unsure of where to go and what classes to take, and there was an education 101 class that could also count as some type of prereq for something else. So I said, I'll take that. I knew I liked English, I knew I liked social studies, but the thought of teaching wasn't at the top of my things to do. Took the class, had an amazing teacher, and absolutely fell in love with the ideas behind it. I actually went to private school K through 12, so it was interesting to be in a class where I was talking about a lot of public school stuff and standardized testing and all these things. I'm like, what are they talking about? Like, this is so foreign to me. State required. I had no idea. Our state test is called the MEEP, and they kept talking about this acronym. I'm like, I have no idea what that is. I never took it. I was so confused. So it opened a door for me. I said, well, I kind of want to look into this a little bit more. And one of the things that I like to think about myself is that I like to think I'm creative, and education allows me, at least in my class, how I run it, to be creative, to do fun things with lessons, to take different approaches to ideas or traditional texts. And on top of that, I feel like I'm really good at reaching the kids that were like me, the kid in high school that could do a lot, but really just didn't want to unless someone could motivate me to do it. And that was the thing that really probably hurt me most, is that I was just an unmotivated high school kid. And I feel like I can identify those kids so quickly within almost the first couple of weeks and say, okay, you were me. I know exactly what you're going to do, and you don't want to do it. It's going to be a bigger pain in the butt later on when you realize, sometimes too late, how you should be. So I take it as that part of the challenge to reach out to those kids who just need that extra bit of attention. And that's no fault of my teachers in high school. I was a tough nut to crack, and some of my English teachers, they didn't get to me until my senior year when I was ready to listen. So I like that opportunity to work with kids and help sometimes wake them up from the days that they're in when it comes to learning and growing.
So you also write at a popular blog. You blog at your own site. What kind of things do you write about specifically, or what kind of things do you like to write about?
I like to write about whatever catches my fancy at the moment. That's a really nice thing about having your own website, is that you're your own boss, and I want to write about something, I'm going to write about it. And for my own podcast, I want to talk about what I want to talk about, just like you guys. You know, you get to set, you know, that agenda for yourself, and that's really nice. So I'll talk about technology, I'll talk about education, I'll talk about pop culture stuff. You know, really where I kind of got my start were just some rambling musings on movies and what they taught me about the education system. I did one like about Star Wars and Goonies and Saved by the Bell. There's a really good, fun post on there about
awesome.
That. So I just kind of let the world of popular culture and education mix. And for Edutopia, I write for them. That sticks more to specifically classroom management and technology integration and things of that. World, project-based learning is another big thing that I'll write about on my blog and on Edutopia. So some of those other areas and other places that I write for tend to stick more to traditional educational issues, where in my site I like to go wherever it takes me. One blog post was why more teachers should play Dungeons & Dragons and the value of the creativity in that game and why it's shunned by people, and I don't understand why. So things like that, it just whatever sparks my interest, I'll just sit down and I'll hash out a post and put it out there.
Then I've also seen you talk about 20-time projects or Genius Hour projects, all the same thing. How did you get started with that, first of all? And then, like, talk about some of the successes that you've seen through that process with some of the student, maybe some student projects that have been successful.
Yeah, so this was the first year I've ever done 20-time. And people act as if I've been doing it for quite some time. Not at all. I decided to do it this summer after it might have been ISTE, maybe. I can't even remember because it's tough for me, because once I decide to do something, I hit every available source possible, and so it's so hard to say, oh, it was this specific one. I can say that AJ Giuliani has been awesome in support of it. You know, he's done a lot of work on 20-time, and he was an early guide for me when I had questions or set up rough ideas about what I wanted to do. But once I got started, like all projects that I do, I jump in with both feet and sometimes close my eyes and just wait for the end, assuming that it'll work out. And with 20-time in particular, it has worked out great. I set it up with three sections of my Honors American Lit classes. So these are honor sophomores. And so I give them every single Friday to work on a project for Tuesday, and I gave that to them in September, and we just concluded yesterday. We hosted TEDx Grosse Pointe South HS. It's the name of my high school. You can find the hashtag TEDxGPSHS, and put it out there, and I did a storify that's on my blog you can check out too, but what that culminated was is that I decided to take my own 20-time project, and that was to see if I could organize a TEDx event. Because, you know, I'm not busy teaching.
Right.
So it was a whole big, you know, process of filling stuff out and a phone call and this and that. And I was shocked in January where I got the approval. And I didn't tell the kids I was working on this. And, you know, because if I got it, yay. If I didn't, you know, I wasn't going to tell them, you know, nothing gained, nothing lost. And I told them, and they were pumped. And as a part of our 20-time project, regardless of a TEDx event, all 90 of my kids were going to have to give an individual speech focusing on what they learned, not what they did. So it wasn't meant to be a book report of, these are all the things that I did. It was always meant to be a talk about what they had learned during this process. So I'll focus on the journey, not the destination. Well, that worked out great, because that's essentially what a TED Talk is. And so what I did was is I gathered all my kids together and said, this is what we're doing, and they got really, really excited. And I had 90 organizers and 90 talks, and then I had to whittle that down to 15 talks for a live event that was live streamed yesterday. We had over The current live stream says we had over 800 views. That is amazing.
Yeah, that's incredible.
When you think about that, and we had 100 people in the audience, which is the TEDx max that you're allowed to have if you've never attended the TED event. So,
oh, cool. I didn't realize that, no.
Yeah, all the little rules that you find out when you host a TEDx event.
Right, yeah.
If you attended TED, your event cannot have more than 100 people. So we had 100 people in the audience, and we had our students and the organizers all there. And from 1 to 5, I had 15 kids give just amazing talks. And you wanted some examples. My first talk was a girl named Kitty who always wanted to climb Mount Kilimanjaro, like any 15-year-old girl, I guess, right? And so over the course of a year, she raised funds, found an organization that does charity work out there around the mountain, and she'll be able to climb it. And she gave her talk at 1:30, and 2.5 hours later, she was on a plane to Africa.
No way.
I had to rearrange the entire kind of morning so that she could be the first talk, because she found the latest flight she could get to be able to get to Florida, to meet the group, to get on another plane. And she was the first talk, and I got to say, hey, give her a round of applause. She's literally getting on a plane to Africa. After she gave her whole talk about finding your mountain, finding the thing that is your challenge and overcoming it. Like, that was like the whole part of her speech. And she says, I literally have a mountain to climb, but all of you have other mountains. And then the end talk was Hannah. And her talk was about the millennial generation, the one that she's a part of. And her whole talk was essentially, we're going to prove these people wrong that assume that we are lazy and disinterested and attached to our phones. You know, we have all the tools in the world to do something great, to change the world, and we have to do it because it is on us. And it was just a powerful speech from start to finish for all of my kids. And there's so many. Like I said, I had 90 kids doing this, and I had to choose 15. It broke my heart because I told the kids I could have done a 2-day TEDx event, like, easily.
These are all archived for viewing whenever, right? I mean, they're on some websites.
They will be officially uploaded to the TEDx YouTube channel hopefully sometime this week. So those will be watched. And that's another TEDx rule, is that you can live stream it, but you're not allowed to archive it. The talk will go right to TED, and so they will be sitting there right next to Sir Ken Robinson. I mean, that's the same equal footing that these kids will get with their talks, and that's really neat.
One of the 20% time projects that I saw you talk about online recently was one of your students who was either doing a walk or a run, and she had a hashtag that y'all created that people could encourage her along the way. Can you tell us more about that? Because I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, Lauren Riley, who is also a speaker at our TEDx event, her 20 time project was that she wanted to run a marathon. And she is not athletic by her own admission. She had never been a runner or trained to run a 5K, much less a marathon. And so during her training, I just started a hashtag that kind of came to my head while we were talking. I did this post. And so the hashtag was Run With Riley. And I just said, hey, people, I know a lot of you out there, runners out there, send her a tweet of just encouragement. And on the day of the marathon, myself, another teacher, and four of her friends, we actually ran the relay along with her. So I ran 5K, another kid ran a 5K, some went 10. And so she always had someone running along with her during this entire marathon. Well, while I tweeted out that hashtag, people were tweeting her words of encouragement. And when she hit her wall at mile 20, her friend started to read the tweets to her. And she said, like, those tweets are what got me through those final 6 miles, was hearing someone encouraging me to do that. And, you know, I didn't know that until, like, 2 days afterwards when they told me that story. And it made me so proud and so excited. And, you know, again, one of those feathers in your caps of why social media is good and, you know, it's not scary and why teachers can use it and why it can be beneficial to students. You know, all of those things that, you know, sometimes people, the naysayers, will say it's so bad. Here's this example of a community of strangers getting together to support a student in a dream that they want to accomplish. And it was just so powerful. And she gave her TED talk about delayed versus instant gratification, how we live in a world where it's so easy to get what you want right now, but there's so much great things about hard work for a bigger goal. And she says, listen, there's no instant gratification in running a marathon. Let me tell you, it's, you know, 12 weeks of training and you cross that finish line. It is the most amazing thing in the world. And because of her training and her passion, I've signed up to do the half marathon in Detroit in October. I watched her and I said, that just looks amazing. I want to be a part of that. Like, I want to have that feeling of all of that hard work and training. And I've always been a runner. I've always been an athlete. So, you know, for me, it won't be nearly as difficult for her. But other kids and her friends are signing up to do the half marathon or marathon with her. Like, these kids are saying, we want to do this too. Like, you did this. You inspired us to do this. So a whole bunch of us are going to go down. She's going to do the marathon. So we're going to just do the half marathon. So I said, well, we'll stop halfway and we'll wave at you as you go by. But, you know, again, it's just an example of how a project can inspire others. And the support that these kids gave, you know, gave up a Sunday. We drove up to Lansing and we all ran with her and crossed the finish line together. And it was just one of those moments where it makes you proud to be a teacher that I never learned in any of my college classes, that no one ever told me you're supposed to do, not supposed to do. It was amazing and something that, you know, I'll remember. And I definitely know that every single one of those kids will remember years from now. And that's why I think one of my favorite things to do in class is to create an experience that will, you know, have memories that these kids will cherish from years down the road. And I think that's what I love about what I do and what I can do.
It's just, it gives me goosebumps just to hear those stories, to hear the impact that's being had outside of just your typical curriculum that we have to, as teachers, teach, and how there's so much more that you can do with kids on top of that that just leaves a much more lasting impact and shows them the power of coming together and learning about things that you're impassioned by and things like that. I guess that leads sort of into my next question of, you yourself as a teacher, how do you get your students excited about what they're going to be learning in your class?
My kids will actually answer this question for you. What they've told me, and I've actually brought kids to Ed Camp. I do a student panel at our Ed Camp Detroit. And someone asked them, hey, what's the most important thing for a teacher to do in your class? And they say, is to be passionate about your subject. If you can show us that you care and love what you do, we will love what you do. Like, we will want to be a part of that. And that's the one thing that I bring to my classes. You know, I love teaching literature. You know, there are parts of it that maybe I don't necessarily like more, you know, as much as others, but that's true about everything. And I'll be honest with kids about that. So listen, we're going to cover this material here. You're going to probably find it dry because I find it dry, and I'm going to do my best to hide it, but let's be honest. There are things in our life that we're not going to be able to love to do. And I'm going to explain it to you. I'm going to explain to you why it's important. I can still be honest and say I don't like it, just like I want you guys to be honest and say, Mr. P, I read this, I didn't like it. Cool, let's talk about why you didn't like it. You know, in some classes and some subjects, you know, kids assume that if they tell the teacher they don't like it, it's insulting. You know, like, oh, I don't like this. Like, it's a personal insult as if I wrote the book or I wrote the poem or something like that. And I tell kids, no, but we can have a discussion about why we both don't like it. We can have a discussion about what elements you didn't like. And so even though I might not like something, I can still bring that passion about the overall idea, about writing, about poetry, about all of those things. And, you know, the kids have always said, that, you know, I love being in classes where the teachers show that they care about what they teach. And, you know, on top of that, they said those teachers tend to also be the ones that actually show that they care about their students. For them, they see a connection between those two things. So for me, I get excited. And one of my tricks of the trade is something I call the first 5 minutes. I've written about it on my blog before. And it's essentially where I take the first 5 minutes or so, some days it's three, sometimes it's seven, whatever, and I just walk around the room and I just talk to kids about, frankly, anything but whatever it is that we're doing. Yeah. How's your day? What's going on? You know, and I do this every single day, so I'll bring up something from yesterday, or you know, someone was out, I'll ask them, hey, are you okay? Were you sick? Is the family okay? You know, just basically just socializing.
Let me ask a follow up to that one, because if I I've tried that before in class. I deal with eighth graders, and I have a hard time transitioning back to the learning environment where, you know, they want to talk about last weekend or last night or whatever, even when we start getting back into learning. How do you make that transition into the actual learning rather than the relation? And I know it's kind of one and the same, but how do you get to, okay, it's party time's over, it's time to learn something new?
For my kids, I think they've learned a social cue. I basically take the same path around the room. I start at one table. My room's designed into tables, so I've got, 6 tables in the room. And so I kind of make a counterclockwise move around the room, talking to everyone, and essentially when I get up to the front and I say, okay, guys, let's get started, everyone's had an opportunity to talk to me. Everyone's had a chance to have their books out. Everyone's had their chance to go to the bathroom, get a drink, all that stuff. So they kind of know and kind of watch me as I get around the room. And it takes longer in September than it does in December, than it does in April. So it's one of those things where I train them as to where I'm going and the conversation that we're having. And the kids, again, sophomores are a little bit, you know, easier to wrangle than eighth graders for sure. And, you know, my freshmen, they are harder to pull in than my sophomores. It is a maturity issue, but sure. The kids also know that those 5 minutes is an awesome time, and so they respect the remaining 42 of the class because they've had those 5 minutes to kind of just chit-chat and go down. So it definitely is a tougher thing to do at the start of the year, but as long as I'm consistent with my expectations all year round, it's one of those things that's cool that I don't have to say. They just know, because they've picked up on the cues that I've kind of given over the course of the year. So it's definitely harder in September than it was, let's say, last week. But, man, when it hits that stride of they have those 5 minutes and then we just transition right into whatever it is that we're doing, it's so cool because, you know, I can just start and, like, you don't miss a beat. So it takes patience on the teacher's part, because long-term what you're getting is a commitment from the students, a relationship with the students, kids that want to work harder just for you because they know that you care about them. You've engaged them in things. You know what's going on in their life. You know, you hear feedback from parents, you know, when they say, so-and-so was talking about this, this, and that in class. I'm like, wow, I totally thought they weren't paying attention. But they're totally invested sometimes because I've shown that I'm invested in them, not just the essay they've written for me the day before. And I think that goes a long way in the classroom.
Cool. So this interview kind of kicks off our summer series this year. We started doing this last summer, and so it's kind of nice that we made it a year. But what is one of the biggest things, like looking back into last school year, what's one of the biggest kind of takeaways or learning experiences that you have captured from last year from your classes that you just taught?
Get out of their way. Really, the one thing that 20 Time has taught me is that sometimes, as teachers, we get in their way of learning. We have so much to offer kids. We do. We've got twice as many years of, you know, if not more, on this earth, and have tons of knowledge to impart to them. But, man, sometimes we just need to get out of their way and let them show us what they can do. And that is what 20 Time has shown me more than anything else. Again, we hosted a TEDx event yesterday, and I got to see 15 people, young adults, like you're looking at 15-year-olds, get up there and talk about what was the most important thing for them, and frankly, what everyone can learn from what they did. Even one girl, she did... Her project was to do yoga, learn yoga, and she wants to be a yoga instructor. But her whole talk was about the power of being an individual and how yoga, you can't copy someone else's pose. It's all about what's right for you and being you and making yourself feel good. And so this whole talk, she culminated and said, I understand that you're probably looking at me going, why should I listen to a 15-year-old about, you know, being an individual? And she says, because it doesn't matter who you are, how old you are, you know, you should all strive to be yourself and not look to the person to your left, not look to the person to your right, and just be you. And she pulled a quote from our Transcendentalist unit and I felt really awesome. Like, we talked about that in class, and she remembered it, and she put it in her slide in TEDx. Like,
that's awesome. Yeah, that's so cool.
And one of those moments where, you know, it was just amazing, and I had nothing to do with this besides getting out of their way. You know, as people thank me and parents say, listen, I just didn't mess it up. Like, that's the only things that you should give me is thanks for messing up. Because all of these kids came to all of these conclusions on their own. And that was what's so amazing to have watched that, is that I could hear maybe bits and pieces of my voice and some of the things that they said. But truthfully, this was all them and their own conclusions based on the success or the failure of their project. And for me, I couldn't be more proud of them and what they accomplished this year. And I'm really sad that I will, you know, not have these group of kids in my class again. Like, that's the thing that helps me out.
You're dealing with sophomores, right? Is that what you said?
Yes, sophomores. Okay.
So did these kids know the TEDx format? I mean, were they familiar with what TED Talks were prior to you saying, hey, we're going to do this?
Some were very, you know, like I watch TED videos on my phone all the time. But that was a really small percentage of that. The vast majority of them had no idea what the concept was. And so once we got the go-ahead, I made sure that we would spend every other Friday watching a TED video. Show them Sir Ken's Schools Kill Creativity video. And they were totally on board with that. We would have these great discussions. And I showed them Jacob Barnett. I showed them Natalie Warren, which is the one that I showed at the TEDx event about anonymous extraordinaries, about basically finding your passion and going for it. So I showed them videos, and then as kids started to prep their talks, I said, the best advice I can give you is to watch more TED Talks. Watch the format, look at how they present it, and from that standpoint, that's what makes it awesome. And people were asking me, you know, how does 2010 fit into your curriculum? I got that question a lot, and I said, well, my kids write in a blog every other week, and they're going to give a speech. And if that's not English curriculum, I don't know what is.
Yeah, really.
And research. And so for me in English, it was like a no-brainer. But that's what these kids did. I had 15 kids that got up in front of an audience of over 800 people on the live stream and 100 people in the audience. And they gave a, you know, 6 to 8 minute talk about something that they learned. And this is something that they will remember forever. And the coolest part of it is that none of that was graded. Yeah. None of those kids did that for a grade. They didn't get extra credit for speaking at TED. They didn't have a rubric for TED. There was a rough rubric for all of their talks, and their blogs were very loosely graded, basically on the did you do it kind of scale. You did? Yay. You didn't? Okay, no credit. So that was another awesome part of this, is that the grading for this was as close to minimal as I could have it. So all of these kids did this because they wanted to. And that's, for me, is like the definition of like learning, is that they did it because they wanted, not to get that grade, not to get those points. And for me, that's something I was really proud of, to kind of set that up for this year.
So, Nick, if someone were to describe you in 3 words, what are 3 words that you hope that they would use to describe you?
Those 3 words. My Twitter bio has it. Actually, I think it's 4. Teacher, leader, learner, nerd is kind of the phrase I've kind of coined for myself, because I think that kind of encompasses who I am over the course of my years of teaching. Is that I, you know, first and foremost, I am a teacher. You know, I love that. I embrace that. I'm proud of it. I'm trying to be a leader. I want to set a good example for myself, for other teachers, in other words, in my building, my district, around the world. Like, you know, I think that what I'm doing is good. I don't know if that makes me arrogant or not, but, you know, I think it's good. I think it works, and I want to pass those ideas on to many people as I can. Learner, because I am. I need to continue to learn. I haven't stopped, and I don't intend to. And I'm a nerd. I am a proud nerd from here on out, and that's who I am, and I embrace it, and I talk about it in class, and I tell them to find their inner nerd and to embrace it as well, so... I cheated. I gave you 4, but those are the 4 words. I think that's
the three. I was going to say, you're not quite the nerd. I don't see any 100-sided die rolling around behind you on the floor back there. But.
Man, he goes to special places. I can't have my son find those. I lose 100.
So you got any good books that you've read this year or blogs that you consistently read that you may recommend to other people?
Oh, as an English teacher, it is so rough to read during the school year. It's the same books over and over again every year for 12 years. I know them really well, but personally, I'm actually a comics guy. I'm a comic book guy. That there's the nerd thing because they're perfect for me to consume over the course of a school year. Once a month, a new 12-page, 14-page issue comes out. So I'm a big Walking Dead fan, the comic. I love the TV show too, but I'm a big Walking Dead fan. The new 52 Wonder Woman series has been amazing since it's released. I'm a big fan of that. A really good book for all the nerds out there. It's called Ready Player One, and the author of it totally escapes me, but Steve Dembo recommended it to me like a year ago. I read it all like one plane ride from wherever it was San Antonio maybe, or the year before that, maybe it was San Diego from Misty. It just consumed the book. Really, really good. As for blogs, you've got to read, if you're not, Pernille Rip's blog. Oh, and her book. As a matter of fact, her book, too. Her book came out. You should read her book, too. Pernille Rip is just an amazing writer, thinker. I told her she's on my bucket list of people to meet. I have not met her yet, and it makes me sad. And I tell her that all the time, that our paths do not seem to cross at the right time. So Pernille's blog is one that is bookmarked and always on my to-read list. And her book, I recommend it for everyone to go out and find that and read it in digital format. And is there another blog? I read so many. I read so many that it's so tough because that's the best reading I can do is short little chunks at night before I go to bed as opposed to a longer book. So those would be my nerdy recommendations and my teacher recommendations.
Cool. Those are good ones.
Well, if you had to look back 5 or 10 years ago, and if you could go back and give yourself a piece of advice, what advice would you give yourself?
Oh, don't be afraid to buck the system. And that's easy for me to say now as a 12-year veteran to a very, very scared rookie teacher when you are... you're so desperate for validation and so fearful that someone's going to come up to you and say, hey, we just realized that you're a terrible teacher and you should not be in front of students. And so you do your best to try to replicate what everyone else is doing because they must be good teachers. They've been teaching a long time, or my teachers did that for me and I turned out kind of okay. So you spend so much time lesson planning from day to day to day and trying not to mess up, you lose the qualities that made you and probably got you hired in the first place because you're so fearful of messing up or making mistakes, which, you know, as you learn, as you get older, you need to make those mistakes because that's how you learn most and that's how you will find out who you are. And so I look back at the teacher I was 10 years ago and it's just embarrassing. I think all of us, if we go and dig through those files of lessons or tests and you read them, it's just embarrassing. Like, I feel like I failed kids. Like, if I should go back and I need to write those kids a check or something or apologize, grovel, I'm saying that is not education. And, you know, and I've had an opportunity to see some of those kids from 10 years ago, and they say, oh, you know, class was so much fun and this and that. And I'm thinking, yeah, but did you learn? I'm like, I don't think you did. I can't be learning. There's no way. So I would just say embrace who you are more, take those risks, have more fun. I spent the first, 2 years huddled in my room during lunches, lesson planning, instead of, you know, just being a teacher and socializing and talking more to other teachers and things like that, because I was so deathly afraid of messing up, and I think that's what I would tell myself for sure.
Cool. So, Nick, the last thing we like to ask our guests is, what's something you're like really passionate about right now? Doesn't have to be necessarily in education; just passionate about in general.
Oh, what am I passionate about? I'm really passionate about, I don't know, my son and my family and my wife. We just spent the day today. We went to the bookstore with him, and we read some books, and we went to Dave and Buster's, and he played some video games and got some tickets and won some prizes. And then we went to a local carnival that was going on, and he rode rides. I rode rides with them, and it was an eventful day. And it's during the school year, you just don't have that time. And so I'm passionate about my family. I love my wife, and she's been supportive with all of this craziness and hosting a TEDx event and doing all of these things and going to ISTE and going to the. I mean, I wouldn't be able to do anything without her. And that's just, I mean, for all of us out there, they're married, have significant others, and they do all the traveling and speaking, know that if you do not have a rock at home, it would not be possible. And she's amazing, and my son is a goofball at 3, and a little smart aleck for sure, and that's...
I'm telling you, you posted a photo today of him reading in the bookstore. Yes. I mean, that was like, that should have been like a magazine photo. That was the best photo I have seen.
he just opened up a book and he saw something. He made that face and I just captured it right at that moment. And it kind of summarized that whole day. It's just, there are surprises around every corner. And I'm passionate about them. I love them to death. And they're always a new adventure. And like I said, without their support, I wouldn't be able to write what I write and speak where I speak if it wasn't for them. So I would say that they are what my most passionate, always will be what I'm most passionate about, for sure.
Well, Nick, we both want to say just thank you so much for coming on with us tonight. We had a blast getting to talk to you and hear some of your stories and getting to hear about the awesome things that your students are doing. So thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was cool. You were actually one of the first people I followed on Twitter when I joined a couple, I guess it was a year and a half ago now. So, yeah, it was cool to finally get to catch up with you.
I'm sorry I've let you down, probably.
No, absolutely not. No.
But, no, thank you guys for having me out. I'm honored to be a guest on your show. It's great, you know, listen to it, and it's just always fun to pick up those little tidbits from other teachers that you wouldn't just normally get through a blog post or since they're all over the country, a rare face-to-face meeting. So please keep up what you guys are doing. I know a lot of people get a lot out of it.
And everyone says that teachers have off for the 3 months of the summer, huh? We're here four nights. We got a marathon night ahead of us with four interviews. So we're working on
lots off. I think I'm on the road more this summer than I am at home. I got Indiana, ISTE, Blackboard, I'm pretty sure I'm out of the house more than I'm in the house.
Me too.
So, yeah, so summer off, everyone.
That's right, yeah. Hey, so if you want to connect with us, you can find us at EduAllStarsHQ on Twitter, hashtag EduAllStars. Website is EduAllStars.com, and you can also just search Google for EduAllStars. You're going to find some way to connect with us for sure.
And if you're watching us live, we would like, if you have time, to continue with us on our EduAllStars Marathon for this evening. Up next at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time, we have Principal Ryan McLean. At 9 p.m., we have Technology Specialist Andrea Keller. And then at 9:45 p.m. Central Standard Time, we have the co-founder of the Ron Clark Academy, Kim Bearden. And so we'd also like to thank Remind 101 for sponsoring this episode. And again, Nick, for coming on with us. So we hope everybody has a great night, and we will talk to you soon.
Take care.
Take care, everyone. Thank you.